Welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. This podcast is brought to you in association with Game Refinery. Join us as we uncover the latest trends in mobile game design.
Hello and welcome to the Mobile Game Dev Playbook. Thanks for tuning in for another episode. This is a podcast all about what makes a great mobile game, what is and isn't working for mobile game designers, and all of the latest trends. I'm your host, John Jordan, and I'm happy I have two experts with me today. So Timo Palamäki, who is the Chief Game Analyst at Game Refinery by Liftoff. How's it going, Timo?
It's going great. Great to be here.
Good, yes. We haven't had you on for a while, so it's good to have you back. And not that Timo isn't our special guest, but Mike is our special guest today. So Mike Tara-Mikin, who is the CEO of Hype Games. How's it going, Mike?
So far, so good. Oh. We'll see how it goes.
Tough audience. Wow. So today's episode, and the reason we have Mike on is we're going to be talking particularly about sort of celebrity partnerships and sort of why you might be thinking about doing those and why how that feeds into sort of the game design and sort of collaboration and business and all that sort of stuff. So Mike has a long history of working with celebrities. Maybe you can say you can tell, but you're gonna go into all that. So maybe to kick us off, Mike. I mean, you had a long career, and Hype Games is just one of the kind of companies that you've been around. So can you give us a potted history of what you've been up to over the last 20 or so years?
Yeah, I wish it was only 20 years. Okay. that would be flattering. No, I started in the gaming industry, as all people do, right out of college as a means to avoid getting a real job. And so I started a company with a friend of mine from college. It was called Hypnotix. We were based out of New York at the time. Did that for about 12 years because, you know, it was just fun. And again, it beat real work. But turns out making games is actually work and it is actually a business. And in 2005, we had sold that company to Electronic Arts. And so packed up the whole team from New York, moved everybody down to Orlando, Florida, and was EA for the next 8 years as a vice president, general manager, running the Tiger Woods PGA Tour business, as well as some free-to-play and mobile EA sports products like Madden Mobile, things like that. Then did a stint at Zynga, doing kind of similar work, focusing on sports, and then at a company called FanDuel, which is not in the gaming industry, but is near and dear to a lot of sports gamers, certainly, looking kind of like that intersection of, you know, fantasy sports and kind of wagering and just general sports entertainment. And then after that, realized, you know, it was kind of fun at the beginning when we kind of called our own shots, made our own products, saw the opportunities in the market that we wanted to pursue and kind of went after them. Except we were a little bit wiser. I mean, we were certainly a lot older, but I'd like to think we're a little bit wiser too. And said, you know, if we did it again, what would we do different? And that's what became that's where we're, you know, Hype or Hip Games was born. We still haven't decided what to actually call ourselves. That's our number one question. It's a conversation starter. It's like, well, how do you pronounce your name? I'm like, well, you tell me. And so, you know, so here we are a few years into this venture, and you know, really kind of enjoying the opportunities that are in the market right now.
And I guess, you know, a very sort of top level, you know, when you're in the sports field, you know, there is just that sort of, there is that natural sort of celebrity there with obviously the people who are playing the sport. So, you know, given you worked, you know, the likes of sort of Tiger Woods and Madden, to the biggest sort of celebrity based sort of sports franchises ever, you know, as a sort of like a, I don't know, to call you like a plucky startup, scrappy startup, I don't know, but do you sort of feel like, clearly, there are some areas you just don't want to get involved with because the Zyngas and the EAs and the Take-Twos just have that sewn up. So does that sort of, you know, almost like as a negative? Do you see that sort of celebrity landscape and go, well, we can't go there. We have to go here. Is that how you start out?
You know, I'll be honest with you. On mobile, no. I think mobile is an incredibly level playing field in that you know, it is still very, it's still very much a service kind of driven business, and whereas, you know, in the case of packaged goods and like, you know, retail kind of, you know, traditional console gaming, there's definitely, you know, some cost barriers to entry. But I think on mobile, there really isn't. And so we're not as, you know, we're not as concerned or intimidated or worried about competitors that might have certain licenses. But I will say, The bigger thing that we think about when we think about celebrities or any kind of licensing kind of stuff is the actual economics of the deals themselves, you know, because I do think that not every opportunity is a good one. And some of them might be great in some effects, but not necessarily in other ones. And so what we worry about mainly is the financial impact. So when you are smaller, you don't have as much to just kind of like throw at an idea to see what happens. And so we have to be a lot more prudent with what we do. So that probably makes us take pause more than who else is doing it. It's just to do the economics work for us. And is this going to really grow the business or grow the product? Or is it just cool to say you hung out with somebody famous?
Yeah, because that clearly, I mean, I guess there's two misconceptions there. One is that every celebrity endorsement requires a ton of money. I mean, I guess the obvious ones sort of do. And
that's a safe bet. That is a safe bet, though.
Yeah. but equally, I'm sure, you know, if there are ways of even sort of structuring deals that may be, you know, lucrative for both parties should they play out, but maybe limit somewhat your downside if they don't. I mean, at a very sort of high level, how do you start to think about those sort of things? Because I guess the other thing is there's so many sort of sports celebrities out there. I mean, you have a golf game, you know, how many golfers out there? You know, there's a lot of golfers with some sort of brand recognition that you could be dealing with. So where do you start?
Yeah, and it's not always, you know, it's not always one-to-one. It's not like if you're doing a golf game, you need to go, you know, browse the universe of golf, you know, people, or if you're doing football, you have to concentrate on football, or as we call it, football. I know you call it football. So maybe I'm presuming, but I'm just judging by the accent. But I think, you know, the way we think about just any kind of a license in general is licenses are partnerships, right? And so you basically, this is somebody you're going to be partnered with in some form, right? And so you're going to expect things from them. They're going to expect things from you. And so you kind of look at it as like, look, is this somebody that I feel comfortable being in a partnership with for some period of time, you know? And so, you know, it's weird. I mean, just being honest, is size kind of matters, right? If you're a small organization trying to partner with a huge organization, there's going to be bureaucracy. There's going to be kind of like this imbalance of, you know, just capabilities. You know, things will take longer for them. If things don't go right, they're bigger than you, you know, so there's this little bit of trepidation you have to take of like who you are and who you're partnering with is just a practical matter. But at the same time, you know, the other thing that we think about is just value to our business. And by that, I mean, there's value in any partnership that is in trying to attract new users to your game. And there's also another one, which is trying to engage and re-engage your existing users. So one of the things that we think about when we think about games in general is this is a service business, right? It's not products. We don't make a game and then just kind of like sit back and see what happens. We basically build a platform and then we have to show up every single day, you know, and run it. I say it's more like, you know, it's more like the restaurant business. I mean, you know, we build it up, but if we don't show up every day, if we don't serve our customers, you know, there is no business. And so as part of that, when we think about like, well, what's going to get people excited? There's a whole host of things. There's game features. There's content that you could put in the game. There's obviously special events and there's obviously special guests that you can kind of bring in. And so we try to think about celebrities not as, you know, the way you would perhaps in console where it's, you know, Tony Hawk, you know, skating, or if it's Tiger Woods golf, or if it's, you know, whatever, John Madden football. It's really more about its ultimate golf. And then, you know, in our current case, and this week, we're partnering with such and such to do these things, which helps bring in new users who are particular, you know, might be fans of, you know, the celebrity, but also the players of our current game are like, oh, well, this is something we didn't do last week. So now it's interesting and it's exciting and let's see where this goes. And then over time, you know, we have this whole kind of sweet, interesting things that we do. And we think celebrity is a big part of that. So I don't want to say it's the only thing, but it's one of them. And we've done, you know, a bunch of events over the last 2 years or so where we have partnered with various celebrities and charities and all stuff like that to just create these special events for our players.
That sort of breaks it down into sort of more granular sort of elements where it's not just so-and-so's name on the box, which I guess, as I say, that was the old way of doing it.
Well, and people still do it. I mean, there's value in saying, you know, putting a name on the game and helping you kind of, you know, in search and helping you in the app stores and helping you with like just discoverability and stuff like that. So there's definitely a value in, you know, putting a license on your product. So I don't want to sort of knock that. For us, though, we've kind of, you know, we take a slightly different approach in that we don't want a lifelong partner. We don't want to build a brand on the back of somebody else. We'd rather leverage appearances than to basically, you know, just kind of like tag our name to somebody and then basically, you know, they own as much of our business as we do at that point.
So Timo, so taking a step back from the sort of specifics of what Mike's been discussing, from the sort of game refinery sort of viewpoint, how do you see this playing out? Are there any sort of trends we should be aware of?
Well, recently we've seen a lot of music theme in all sorts of games. So it's interesting that, you know, not just on like music games, like Mike said that, you know, when making a golf game, you don't purely look for a golfer. So, you know, Garena Free Fire, they had Cristiano Ronaldo, soccer player, and then Justin Bieber doing concert there. And now, you know, the music theme is just, even in Cookie Run Kingdom, they're currently having like a BTS, the Korean boy band collaboration. So like, and my favorite, you know, the Final Fantasy Brave Exvius, they had Katy Perry and Ariana Grande become like Final Fantasy characters back in the day. So those were really surprising, and we still find ourselves talking about it in the office. Like our analyst for the Brave Exvius game still loves having a team that consists of Ariana Grande and Katy Perry, and just really focusing on those collab characters. So they can, I think they can also bring like long time amusement if they're like characters that you can collect. But yeah, to answer your question, I think music theme in general is something we see a lot, even if it's on like, well, surprising context.
Yes, no, I think that's a good point. I guess it's sort of the people you're mentioning there are sort of, you know, when you get that sort of global level of celebrity, you sort of get the celebrity status, not for doing anything at all up to that point, or the thing you did, musician or the actor, a bit becomes sort of irrelevant to what you are then. You just sort of just become a sort of a brand that doesn't really matter. And yeah,
musicians are huge. I actually think, you know, when you think about gaming and kind of community and celebrity, it's really just pop culture, right? And I actually think music is, oddly enough, music, movies, they're the thread, you know, that kind of ties everything else together. We've had a couple of events that we've done in the game where we brought in kind of a, you know, musician who's known for also being a golfer, like Alice Cooper and Nico McBrain, the drummer from Iron Maiden, you know, and had, you know, essentially had a golf event where they played live against our users. They played this closest to the pin competition where they were hitting shots. Everybody at home was playing live while we were streaming the audio of this kind of like an interview straight into the game. And, you know, it was interesting because, like, while you're playing golf, you're talking about, you know, the time that Alice Cooper hung out with Elvis Presley in 1973 and almost shot him. True story. I didn't know that. You know, the time when Nico McBrain got, you know, drunk with Ronnie James Dio in Germany and blah, 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 while we're playing golf. And so for us, this, like, when you think about our audience, which is, you know, people who play golf, you know, oddly enough, things that happened in the 80s and 90s are kind of relevant to them. And so for us, bringing in interesting people that you can play alongside within golf works. But then music is like this sort of common thread. You know, it's always like you just get a musician to talk about what it's like to be a rock star, you know, and it's like, yeah, I will definitely listen to that story.
So maybe the interesting bit is, and the sort of the cost effective bit is to find celebrities with side interests that interact with your game. So hopefully they won't charge so much as it being the thing that they're known for, and actually they'll be quite enthusiastic about, you know, I mean, I guess Alice Cooper in golf is a pretty well known, even I know that one, but I'm sure, you know, everyone has some sort of interesting sort of side hustle or side interest that...
Well, we've also worked with PGA Tour players too. I mean, same thing, but the key, I think, is the key for us, at least with all this, is just, you know, make it something interesting that surprises people, that are like, hey, I definitely want to tune into that. And it's funny, though, because I keep saying tune in like it's a show. Truth is, it's a game. But you think about it the same way. It's like, how do you get somebody to watch a show? Guest stars, you know? How do you get somebody to watch, you know, anything, as you keep it fresh and interesting? And we take the same approach to gaming, especially when it's a service and not a product. You know, there's always, you know, the only thing, you know, your arch enemy, we always say our arch enemy is boredom. It's like when our users get bored, then we're in trouble. And so we built a great game. Now we have to just keep them, you know, interested in it for years.
So the other game you've got live is 8-Ball Smash. So I'm sure there is a whole sort of subset of obviously snooker players and pool players, but I guess they're not so internationally renowned. So is that just a game that you can't sort of leverage in the same way as you can golf, or is that just my lack of imagination in that scene and there's loads of people who want to queuing up?
I don't want to say there's a lack of imagination, John. I wouldn't go that far. but I will say, 8-Ball Smash is much earlier in its sort of form. It's still, generally soft launched. Ultimate Golf is a lot more mature, further along. And so a lot of the stuff that we're doing in Ultimate Golf, we know we've got a product that works. We know we've got a platform and a game that is solid and balanced well. Now it's about, look, how do we draw attention? How do we engage people? That said, we fully intend to do, to kind of leverage these like live events with celebrities in every product that we do, even stuff that we have in development right now. It's a key part of it. We build modes that are designed specifically to let you play against somebody famous. We've done, we have a mode in our game called the Boss Battle, which is essentially we get a famous person, or I don't want to say famous, we get an interesting person to play a round of golf. We then take that whole session and then we let everybody at home play along and see if they can beat it. And then we have a whole prizing structure of, 1, 2, 3 stars. There's like, if you beat a whole bunch of achievements that you can do while you play. But the actual event was performed by somebody notable. And then, of course, we shoot a video of it. We put a, podcast basically online of here's what it was like when such and such played. We interview him throughout the whole process, or her throughout the whole process. And then people at home enter those events. And depending on how well they do against this notable person is the amount of prizes that they can earn. And that's worked remarkably well for us. We've done that a few times with some celebrities. We've done that with organizations like the Arnold Palmer Foundation, where we had boss battles against Arnold Palmer, who is not with us anymore, but still just the idea of a challenge that we would create, and if you could beat Mr. Palmer, this is the stuff that you get. And we did that for charity a few times, and it's been tremendously successful both times.
So that's the, for me sort of going into the podcast and saying you get the celebrity, it's very expensive, you slap their name on the game and off you go, this is the total antithesis, where you're basically thinking about it doesn't really, the celebrity themselves sort of obviously matter for the event, but the fact you're going to build that into your sort of production pipeline, your live ops pipeline, that's the sort of bottom up thinking, and the celebrity bit you can just sort of, you find those as you go along sort of thing. You don't worry too much about them in most cases, but you have to have the pipeline and the process and the creativity to think how you can use this thing.
Yeah, I think thanks to the internet, there is no shortage of celebrities anymore. There's people that are literally only famous from like about 3 days ago, and you'll never hear of them 2 days from now. But in this moment, they're incredibly hot, and you could leverage it. And so I do think that this is a kind of a buyer's market when you're trying to think about, hey, how do we get interesting people, notable people into our products so that so they can, our users are entertained by that. And I think there it goes anywhere from, TikTokers, YouTubers, all the way up to like A-list, Hollywood celebrities, rock legends, obviously athletes, of course, in the stuff that we do. But it's this whole idea of like, we have this kind of philosophy of it's like for Ultimate Golf, it's, you just want to play golf with interesting people. Right. And that starts with our own community. That starts with our own players. Right. Our own players are the interesting people. But then we could make it a little bit more interesting. It's like, oh, it's that guy from that YouTube channel, or hey, it's that guy from that band that I really like, or it's that, a girl from that movie that I saw, or that athlete who, that PGA or LPGA player. So it really, I say this because you asked the question earlier on about, kind of intimidation from a bigger, company like an EA or a Take-Two that's kind of in sports licensing. There's licensing with organizations like the NFL or FIFA or, the NBA. That's a completely different animal, right? And to me, like when you have kind of like these centralized licenses, like if you wanted to make a football game, you have to do a deal with the NFL or else you just won't be viewed as legitimate. That to me goes more towards like the kind of products that you make. When we think about sports games, we actually think like one of our first rules is like, do we need a big license to be competitive? Because if we do, it's really going to be challenging for us. Can we find things where you could be successful in a decentralized kind of like licensing environment where like in Ultimate Golf, we have lots of, real golf courses. Well, we do each one of those individually. And then we have celebrities and we do each one of those individually. And we don't in golf, for example, need one central license to legitimize the whole thing. And so we like that. You know, we like the ability that we can kind of pick and choose the deals that make sense for us and honestly scale them up. As the business grows, we can get more and more ambitious. But it's picking, it's kind of picking where you play. If you're going to go in there and be like, hey, we're going to make an NFL game we're going to make an American football or a European football or soccer game, it's going to be hard to do it without a license. You know, you're going to have to really need something. But if you're going to go build golf, well, that's a lot easier to do. And so we kind of, this is part of that whole, we think we got a little bit smarter, is we're kind of like, we can kind of avoid some of these problems early on and then be able to, kind of build on some of these like smaller opportunities and build them into bigger ones.
Timo, just when you were mentioning then, the sort of Cristiano Ronaldo in Free Fire, the sort of, and obviously, he's a global star, but I do kind of wonder at that point, do we think we end up in the situation of, not that I would say that's a terrible license, but it strikes me that there's not necessarily a whole bunch of synergy beyond you've got Cristiano Ronaldo in this sort of, battle royale shooting game. I mean, clearly you wouldn't imagine Cristiano Ronaldo plays that sort of game. Pretty unlikely, I think. So, it clearly one of the downsides would be if you had a really disconnected celebrity and game. But did you think on one level, can we see that in any data? What's your gut feeling around, because Mike's been talking about very holistic sort of, nicely controlled sort of things, but there still are these sort of big licenses. And, I don't know whether, Cookie Run and BTS, they're both South Koreans, I suppose. So maybe there is some sort of cultural synergy there, but does that work globally, do we think?
Well, I think this works because people are still doing it. And currently I think there's a Neymar Jr. collaboration with Mech Arena. That's also I didn't expect a soccer player in Mech Arena. I didn't expect a soccer player in Arena Free Fire. But kind of like Mike said earlier that, that there are celebrities that also play golf. There are, these mobile gamers, hardcore mobile gamers that also enjoy soccer, might be really into it, And it's a big thing worldwide, and it kind of depends what audience you're targeting as well. Brawl Stars had, collaboration with, I personally don't watch much soccer, but it was some French soccer team that they collaborated with, and they brought these skins for different characters that they could have the kind of suits for that team. And that resonated really, really well with some players. And I think they also later on did a collaboration like that with Latin America teams. And people really enjoyed those as well. So, kind of expanding, if you just keep on giving just the same kind of, then where's the surprise, where the fun?
I think a lot of times the key to these is finding opportunities where you can measure their impact. Because there's a lot of stuff that and you don't measure it in likes or views. You have to measure it in some quantifiable, business metric that says, hey, we did this thing and this was the impact to the business. But remember, every time I say business, I mean, it sounds kind of dry, but the truth is the business is the game. That's really like if your players are more engaged, if your retention goes up, if people buy more stuff, well, it's an impact on the business, but it's also really you're doing it for the benefit of your players. So if your players are happy, your business is great. And the trick with a lot of these kind of collaborations is that you have to know what to measure. You have to know what it is. How are you going to know if this is a good idea or not? And so we spend a lot of our time doing deals where we have a fairly binary kind of measurement that we can go back and say, we did this, we got this. Was it worth it? If it was, let's do more like it. If not, how do we tune it and go forward? We believe this is a huge avenue. Certainly these days, when you look at what's going on with kind of like just basically user acquisition and iOS changes and things like that, people have to get creative. We think this is a fantastic way of doing it. But the key is you have to get back to measuring the performance of all of these endeavors. Otherwise, again, it's really easy to just spend money.
But isn't the business metric always money? Isn't it? I mean,
but it doesn't have to be direct. It doesn't have to be direct. I mean, if it's, you know, if it's an engagement, if it's a retention thing, I mean, yes, it will eventually trickle down to it, but it's not like, you know, it's not like, hey, we're going to sell, you know, items. And if you buy them, then that kind of works. I mean, you do look at it holistically, but my bigger point was more that it is very important in any licensing deal at all ever, but is really important, certainly in the stuff that we're talking about right now, that you have some kind of quantifiable measurement around the value that's being added. Because if not, then you just never know if it's a good deal or not. You know, then it's just like, this is what they want. Do we want to give it to them? Yes. You know, like you never know where your points are. And a lot of times, you know, it's funny is that's what I just said sounds incredibly basic, right? But believe it or not, a lot of times it's really hard to measure it. It's really hard. And the quantification, whatever, comes down to somebody's opinion. So a lot of times when we do these console deals, we'd be like, well, this is what the license is worth based on an opinion, because we don't really have any kind of data to do it otherwise. But when you get into mobile and when you get kind of into this, you know, daily data-driven kind of businesses, it's a lot easier to put checks in place to get, you know, kind of hard number performance kind of analysis of each one of these deals, which is, you know, one of the many reasons why we love mobile as a business platform. And it's, and, you know, and, but it also becomes a discipline that you just have to do. You have to look at opportunities, say, that sounds really cool. And you got to do it. You got to measure it, you know, and then you got to kind of decide like whether it was successful or not, not just if it was cool or not.
I mean, I suppose retention is always a much more kind of interesting sort of mechanic, because as you say, it's not the direct sort of revenue, but if you can keep your retention up, you can sort of, to a degree, I guess, worry about how you monetize that.
Well, we have
data. I mean, you can't.
No, you're absolutely right. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was just going to say, you know, we have, you know, we have users in Ultimate Golf that have played nonstop for like 2.5 years. You know, ever since we launched, and you know, and what I wake up in the middle of the night worrying about is that they get bored one day. I mean, it's been 2.5 years. It's been a great run. You know, we're kind of coming up on 3 years. And what I worry about is that somehow we become dull to them. And so that's why a lot of this is like, when we talk about retention, I don't mean D1 or, you know, D7 or D30. I mean like D3 years, you know, 3Y. And I think all of this kind of stuff is, as long as we evolve and as long as we keep things interesting like this, I think that's our best shot at retaining people for the really long term.
And I think it's sort of interesting. It's something we sort of talk a lot about on these podcasts, is, you know, and you've sort of touched upon it, is it's very interesting now with these sort of mobile games where you have these things where you very easily expect these to last decades, you know, and obviously the game they are in 10 years' time compared to the game they were when they launched is, you know, they would be like, I don't know, the fifth sequel or 10th sequel or something. But it's very interesting where, again, I often say it like the game is sort of, you know, clearly important because people like to play that, but it's sort of almost like the abstract bit that they sort of do. They know they have to do that, but all the stuff around it is actually what keeps them engaged in what's going on. I mean, the game is sort of has to be there. But
and if you do it right, it's not even the game. It becomes more about the people who play the game, right? So I'm a big proponent, not proponent, but a big advocate of the fact that we don't make games, we build communities, right? We create products that certain people enjoy, and then when they start playing it, they meet other people that enjoy the same stuff. And then it's really the glue is not us. The glue is the other people that are playing the game. And as long as we keep providing them with a platform and an outlet to hang out with, you know, their friends from around the world who they didn't know, you know, before our game came along, and now, you know, they would help them move, you know, and drive them to the airport, which is a true test of friendship. You know, once you build those relationships, for us, it's just, you know, continuing to empower them. And so, you know, I think all this kind of stuff really kind of feeds into that. Hey, is this something, you know, is this something that's going to keep people around?
And we sort of have a question here, which maybe I'll sort of turn a little bit. So I guess one thing, obvious question is who's your dream collaboration, but from the discussion we've had, is that's looking at it totally the wrong way, because your dream collaboration would be like a one-off at that point, and then next month you have to look at another one. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe there will be ones where you go, is that a good way of looking at it? Like, oh, it'd be so great if we had X or Y.
Sure. Well, the funny thing is, you know, I've already done a bunch that I'm really, really proud of, which is great. There's no kind of like, well, I guess there are a few, but, you know, to me, all of this started actually a very long time ago. I think part of what I like with collaborations is finding people that you think are interesting today that are not quite, you know, they're not quite as big as you think they're going to be. I've always been kind of keen to finding people that are kind of coming up and being able to partner with them when, you know, when it's still, you know, you both have something to gain from it. Like just from the success of whatever it is you're doing. I was going to try to work this into the conversation somehow, but, you know, years ago at Hypnotics when we were doing Ultimate Golf, what I really wanted was Adam Sandler to be the narrator, right? Way out of our league. So then we tried like some others. How about Norm MacDonald? Couldn't even get him either. And then I tried to get somebody that sounded like this funny guy that used to be on Comedy Central named Steve Carell. And rather than finding a sound alike, we called him like at the Daily Show, which is in the US on Comedy Central. And he said, yeah, I'd be happy to do it, but we have to do it like this week because I'm moving to California because I got a part in a movie. And so we had Steve Carell did Outlaw Golf and then Outlaw Volleyball for us for an incredibly small amount of money, like incredibly, like single thousands, you know. And the other key was you couldn't tell his agent he was doing it because there was not enough money to split with him. And then when Steve got too big for us, we went to the other guy who sounded just like Steve Carell, Steve Colbert, and he did it too. Slightly more money, but still, you know, so Steve Carell, Steve Colbert kind of before they got a lot bigger. And then the best one probably, and this is all back in the day, we did a game called Deer Avenger where deer hunted people. That was the whole shtick. It was incredibly successful just based off of that concept. And the guy who we hired as our writer was a writer on the Conan O'Brien show. And he just had friends who were, you know, kind of up and coming actors and writers in New York. So for $250 each, we got Amy Poehler and Tina Fey to come in and record some stupid deer jokes. And I always tell that story. And if you Google it, there's like a Huffington Post article somewhere. It says the first time they ever collaborated was on a game called Deer Avenger 2. I'm like, yes, it was. And no, I didn't know either. Well, I kind of knew Amy Poehler because she was on the show called Upright Citizens Brigade. I'm like, oh, that's that girl from that show. That's pretty cool, you know. And then every time I watch Parks and Rec, I tell everybody, hey, did I tell you about the time that? But, you know, and so to me, that was always interesting, kind of those collaborations of you just find people that you think are really funny or interesting or doing cool stuff. And then you say, I'd love to work together, you know, and we do that now. It's like, you know, we watch, I'll watch Netflix and I'll see comedians and I'll be like, we should like just reach out and see if we can do something with them. You know, it's just, and just stuff like that. That said, I mean, obviously I make golf games. I'd love to work with Tiger Woods. So again, you know, so those are, it's always great to kind of work with people that are kind of at the pinnacle of, you know, certainly of the sport that you're doing. I'm a massive Iron Maiden fan. So just working with Nico was really just, it was just kind of like a personal thing. I'm like, I'd like to work with Dave Murray, who's the guitarist from that band too, get both of them. So these are, you know, but that said, you know, there's just so many kind of interesting people that you can collaborate with. And because of the way the business works now, you know, collaboration used to be a whole big thing. You had to like get together. You had to, you know, be in a place at the same time. It like whatever it was, you had to do, you know, mocaps and photo shoots and all this stuff. They were kind of big endeavors. Now, you know, we did some events last year with Steve Young, who's a big NFL, you know, legend. Rob Riggle. I don't know, you know, I'm sure you guys know who Rob Riggle is. If not, he was basically in every comedy made in the 90s and then 2000s too. And John O'Hurley from Seinfeld and Patrick Warburton from Seinfeld as well. And we did it all over Zoom, you know? So these days, collaboration is like, hey, if we can get half hour together, we can package something up, we can put it in our product. And so, you know, John O'Hurley hosted a celebrity golf tournament that we had. He's the guy, he's the one who brought in Alice Cooper and Riggle and Steve Young and a whole bunch of others. And the whole thing was weird. You know, we would do this celebrity kind of golf head-to-head match where everybody at home was playing. And then John was in his car and, you know, literally the phone was like, you know, in his like cup holder looking up. I don't think he was driving, but, you know, and then the guests were all like, all kind of around the world and we were here and we were connecting with thousands of people simultaneously. They were playing golf against them. That's cool. You know, that wasn't possible 10 years ago, even. I mean, you know, and it is today and it's just getting kind of more and more. So, you know, my kind of dream celebrities are, it's not so much that there's somebody I want to work with. There's just cool people that I haven't worked with yet, you know, that we want to incorporate into this.
Cool. Good. I think, yes, the conclusion there is just getting the mindset of don't worry about the celebrity bit of it. Just getting the mindset of people who you think can be part of your product and your community is going to sort of like, and then,
you know. Yeah, it's like, you know, your players, and, you know, I mean, if golf is different because, like, you know, like, I'm the target market. So for me, it's like, look, if I like it, there's a good chance a bunch of other people do too. But it's just that, mindset, like you just said, it's like, who does your audience gravitate towards? Just get them involved, you know, make it interesting for them, because you're trying to hold on to people for, you know, decades. You're trying to get them to, like, consider your product is on mobile part of their daily life for the next 5 to 10 years. And if that's the case, you better keep it fresh. So
good. Well, in case of keeping it fresh, we will. I think that's enough. We don't want to overstay our welcome. And after your great stories, I don't think I've got anything to cap that. So we'll leave it there. Thank you so much, Mike. That was fascinating.
Oh, you're welcome. I mean, you know, it's a topic that I think is particularly relevant. You know, I think it always has been. Licensing and celebrities have always been part of gaming. I think the game has changed. It is less about sticking someone's name on your product. It is more about integrating, you know, interesting people into your community, because it is now really a community. And this is about, you know, guest appearances in your community to give everyone who's playing your product something to talk about. And then you do it again. And then you just kind of keeping it fresh and surprising and delighting people as you go. And I think it's just it's a huge part of the business now.
Thanks for that, Mike. Thanks, Timu, as well. I now have a in my head a vision of all you people at Game Refinery with your Final Fantasy characters, Katy Perry and whatever. Good, so that's good. And thank you to you for watching, listening to the podcast, however you're consuming it. Thanks for tuning in. Every episode, we're talking to people who are building out this incredible sort of mobile free-to-play space, which is now the largest single part of the gaming industry, and much really as we've been discussing in this episode, much beyond sort of what we consider like a game. These are much more about communities that last for years. So I hope you're finding the content interesting. Please subscribe and come back next time. See you then.